John! John! Look up!
What?
I'm up
here! What the hell are you... What?
I'm stuck!
How did you get your bike up there?
I have this thing!
What thing?
It's hard to explain, but I'm stuck.
Okay.
We're just floating.
Well, how... What?
We're falling!
I'm Drew.
And I'm John.
And you're listening to The Hourchive, our ever-growing library of everything, 1 hour at a time.
How did we talk about the last one?
Well, we discussed the fact that...
what are we calling this?
I don't know, really have a title for it. It's just another in our series of movie retrospectives.
30
marking
years.
Marking the 30th anniversary of a particular film.
Yeah.
In this case, a film from 1982, as in the last case.
Yeah.
Because it's 2012 right now, and 30 years ago was 1982. We're talking about movies from 82.
And the one we're talking about... Today is maybe a little lesser known and maybe less successful than
Underground,
than Grease 2.
Yeah. It didn't really have the broad appeal that Grease 2
and it
had.
Unfortunately was not a sequel.
Yeah. So there wasn't a built in audience for it, you know. And really it was kind of a hard sell in 1982. I mean, there wasn't really a whole lot of a market for things related to like space and stuff.
It unfortunately sort of destroyed Steven Spielberg's career.
Yeah.
As a director. We're talking about E.T., the extraterrestrial.
Yeah.
We're joking, of course.
E.T.
It was huge. They
intergalactic.
It was a big deal.
Big movie. Yeah. But it wasn't a big movie for you.
No, I didn't see it in 1982.
Hmm. Were you just too good for it?
No, I was 1 year old.
Oh.
I was 1 year old.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I did see it, but I had no memory of it. So I saw it later, probably as a preteen or something like that. Mm-hmm. Maybe actually like a teenager. I saw it for the first time.
That's the sweet spot.
And I was really bored by it. So, you know, we talked about doing this series of podcasts where we would do a movie that came out in 1982. We'd both watch it and review it. And I was really excited about Grease 2 when we did that first. And I was not excited about E.T.
Yeah.
So I watched it again. And I'm not sure what was wrong with me when I watched it last time because I thought it was an amazing movie.
Are you kidding or are you serious?
No, I'm totally serious. Uh-huh. I was really blown away by how good it was.
Yeah.
And it is, in my mind, and this is really only for... reasons that are very specific to me, it is only second to Jurassic Park in Spielberg's opus.
Wow. So just like that, like a bullet, like an alien on a bicycle.
Yeah.
It's just right up there.
I was really impressed from the beginning, from the very beginning of the movie, all the way to the end. And there were a few parts where I didn't like what he had done when it happened, but then later felt like what he had done was necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And I overall think it is an exceptional movie.
I wish I could agree with you, but I think it is more than an exceptional movie. In full disclosure, I mean, I should probably admit that I have a reputation for having a somewhat obsessive relationship with this movie in particular.
There's going to be a photo of you on thearchive.com, and it's wonderful. And I think it'll accurately depict in a visual way your obsession. It is my favorite photo of you now.
Wow.
That's... So second best Spielberg movie, in my opinion, and best photo of you ever. And it's pretty great. So I want to say that if I'm being completely fair, it's Spielberg's best movie.
Wow.
But I'm not being fair because I love Jurassic Park.
Because you're a jerk.
And that is my favorite movie by him. But I would concede it is not better than, in terms of filmmaking, it is not better than E.T. Hmm. In terms of emotional weight.
E.T. gets a lot of flack. If it gets any kind of criticism, I think it's criticized for being overly sentimental or manipulative, emotionally manipulative.
Mm-hmm.
And the one reason that I can't go along with that is because I don't think that Spielberg is consciously manipulating anything in this movie. I think he genuinely is talking from a place that is probably his most personal, at least certainly his most personal to that point.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's really ultimately why it is as good as it is. And his passion comes across, like you said, in every frame of that movie. I think he is feeling every moment of that movie.
Yeah. The opening scene with, you know, all the little ETs out there doing whatever they're doing.
And collecting then, plants.
Yeah.
Botanizing.
I love how like dark that scene, not like dark as in evil, but like literally dark.
Mm-hmm.
It is
imposing. I think he does an incredible job of, you know, conveying a sense of fear and uncertainty, you know, which I think is great. One, because you're not sure what you're getting in this movie.
Yeah.
But it's also, you know, it puts you in E.T.'s shoes
it's
in a way
ambiguous.
Because he's walking around in this foreign environment.
Yeah.
You know, to us, it's a forest, but to him, it's, you know, I love the way those shots of like the redwood trees shot from such an extreme angle that they are just so insanely high, which is, I mean, he's a short alien, so of course they're going to look that way. And they seem to look even more, you know, elongated and everything the way he shot that.
I really liked how ambiguous it was initially.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of whether these are good aliens or bad aliens, or really, it doesn't give you any evidence to one or the other.
Yeah.
And I was wondering as I was watching it if this came out first or if Alien came out first.
Alien did by about 3 years,
and
I think.
So I wondered if he was playing off of that expectation to some degree.
Oh, yeah.
Because there are some really. There are some similarities just in the way that it's shot, and this might be just because they're of a similar era in filmmaking, but the sort of quietness of a lot of the scenes, and also initially before it becomes clear that E.T. is not bad or dangerous, there are, you know, like some of the noises that E.T. makes or some of the things that happen were reminiscent to me of Alien, just in getting those, you know, quicks or scares or shocks or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I wondered if maybe Spielberg, whether consciously or not, was playing off that expectation.
Oh yeah. Right. Then, that you're associating those sounds and things with, you know, something more threatening.
And then that way it pays off even more, I think, when it's not a threat.
Yeah.
You know, it's that much more exciting.
Yeah. Yeah.
As putting yourself in Elliot's shoes, you know, like you meet an alien, you know, and it's not dangerous.
Yeah.
It's your friend.
And I hadn't really paid attention to this up until this most recent viewing, but I think it's amazing how easily you buy into the notion that Elliot is he finds E.T. endearing, you know, like he's initially uncertain, but even after he gets scared out of his wits, you know, he's still fascinated with it. There's already like a bond there.
Yeah.
And I think part of that is because he has done such an amazing job in like 20 seconds of film of conveying just how needy Elliot is at the outset of this movie.
Yeah.
Like the very first time you see him, he's like leaning over the kitchen table or the barrier. He's already like separated from the rest of the family because he's physically behind this barrier trying to get a word in with his brother and his friends, you know, saying like, I'm ready to play. I want to, you know, be in on this.
Yeah.
And he's like just so earnest but totally separated, you know, and they're like not even hearing him basically. And that I can't think of any other movie that so subtly does that and why it's so important, you know, in this case.
Yeah.
Because you have to buy into that idea that he
needs something.
He needs E.T. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't even know what E.T. is, and it could be, you know, he's scared of E.T., but he still feels, you know, he needs him.
Yeah.
So even in those scenes where it's sort of a slow build up, you know, like he has like three almost encounters with E.T. before there's ever any like real tangible connection there, which today would be unheard of. You know, nobody would ever take that much time to develop that relationship. You know,
are they playing Dungeons and Dragons?
I think it's like
an approximation.
Yeah. It's a D&D like game. Yeah.
Cause they had all these little like walls and rooms and that set up on that table.
Yeah. I think he actually calls it something like Wizards and Monsters or something like that.
And then Mazes and Monsters.
Yeah. Yeah. with Tom Hanks.
In that opening scene, I guess it's not the opening scene. In that opening scene for the people, the kids,
the introduction. Yeah,
I loved it, but it was also confusing because, and I would imagine this is, might be somewhat intentional, but I was like, who is related to who here?
Uh-huh.
And then the mom shows up out of nowhere. And like the one kid like reaches out to grab her ass.
He's like poking her. Yeah.
But I noted a quote that I really liked and I can't remember how he said it now. Maybe you'll remember, but when Elliot runs in having encountered E.T. for the first time and saying there's something in the shed or whatever. And, the one kid, I guess it's his older brother goes, we'll check it out, mom. Or, he's or what like, did he say?
You stay here, mom. We'll check it out.
Yeah. That's really good. That's an excellent quote. Oh, man.
I like how the one kid like sneaks around the mom and grabs this giant knife.
Yeah.
You know, like just so instantly those kids had such a great rapport.
Yeah.
You know, a tangible rapport. Like they were believable.
Seemed very real.
And the fact that the mom is so overwhelmed.
Yeah.
You know, immediately where, you know, you kind of get the sense. And that's the kind of thing, like, my attachment to the movie, the stuff that I find really impactful about it has changed over the years. You know, when I was a kid, it was obviously, like, just this, you know, really fascinating spectacle, you know, like I hadn't seen anything like it.
Yeah.
I saw it in the theater when it first came out. I was like three.
Yeah.
But I still remember going to see it, you know, and it made that kind of impact on me. And then like, as I was growing up, it became very much this like a rejection of adulthood kind of scenario.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's a really, there's not a whole lot of subtlety in the way that
anti-adult it is.
It is the way it addresses the majority of adulthood, you know, and it's told from the perspective of a child. So I think that's natural. But now, and especially on this most recent viewing, like, it is the interactions of that family that really hit me hardest. And that starts right at the beginning there, because, you know, you immediately sense Elliot's detachment from everything.
Yeah.
And the way that his mom is, she's in over her head.
She's sort of lost.
Yeah. She's so overwhelmed. And then that just continues to build over the course of the movie. And as when it reaches a critical point, it makes her reaction to the truth, you know, and finding out that much more powerful.
Yeah. This is what it's come to.
Yeah.
Like I'm so unaware and overwhelmed and at a loss that I didn't realize there was an alien in my house.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And he walked it right in front of me multiple times. Yeah. You know, and it's totally, while that scene is really funny, it's also, you know, now that you're saying that, really, really hammers that home. Like her just, you know, and you put, I don't think as the viewer, you put any fault on her. You know, she is totally, you know, you're like, of course you're lost. Like,
yeah.
First of all, look at the three kids that you're dealing with. You know, they're all really smart. They're all really precocious, and they're such distinct people.
Yeah,
you know, and so I can't, you know, imagine trying to manage those three kids.
Yeah,
and I think the absence of the father is so incredibly striking in the movie. And
yeah.
And the loss is clearly felt by every member of that family.
Yeah.
You know, and with the most so from Elliot, you know,
yeah.
Which is clear. And like, I think what I saw in his relationship with E.T. was Elliot's desire to almost be a father to E.T., you know, to be there for E.T. in the way that his father isn't there for him.
Yeah.
You know, or in the way that he sees no adult being there for him.
Yeah.
You know, and I think his protectiveness of E.T. is indicative of that.
Yeah. I had not even thought of that, but it totally makes sense thinking back now to the way he's sort of coddling him at the beginning, you know, and saying, I mean, this is the shark eats the fish,
man, that
you know?
Scene.
And, yeah. Yeah. Oh man, I know. I mean, it's so easy. Like, it's so easy for me to understand now how I was able to get hooked on this, you know, to be in it, because I don't think people give Spielberg enough credit for this. You know, a lot of his movies have these references to like video games and you know stuff like the Goonies talk about video games and things like that.
Yeah.
And I think people look at the fact that there's like a Yoda costume in this movie, they're like, oh, ha ha ha, it's a little in joke, you know, because he likes Steven Spielberg. But that makes such a difference in grounding that movie for a person of the right age and of the timing, you know, like that. Those were all things that I saw in my real life. Mm-hmm. You know, I had those action figures, you know. There were posters on the wall that were in my classroom growing up, you know, so that stuff all just reinforces the sense of place in this and really fortifies it for me.
I wrote down lots of Star Wars.
Yeah.
That, I think that might be my only criticism, to be honest, was it felt like there was a little too many nods. And you know, I think maybe it was accurate just in that that's probably all that kids that age were interested in.
Yeah.
But it actually felt a little unrealistic to me because I didn't see any other properties represented, you know? But that it was only a slight thing, you know, it wasn't a huge deal. And that scene where he is sort of showing E.T. everything in the room.
Yeah.
And I love the importance he lends to that.
Yeah.
You know, Elliot's like, I got to explain all this stuff.
Yeah. This is a piggy bank. You know? Put the money in the pig.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the there's something he picks up and he's like, this is a this, but this isn't a real one. He does it with a car. He does it with a car. Oh,
yeah. And then the peanut. Yeah. Yeah. The bank. Yeah. Yeah. That's what it was. It's not a pig. It's peanut. Yeah. Peanut. He's like, yeah. You eat these peanuts, yeah, but you can't eat this one.
Dad would believe me. Maybe you ought to call your father and tell him about it.
I can't. He's in Mexico with Sally. Where's Mexico?
I'm gonna kill you.
If you ever see it again, whatever it is, don't touch it. Just call me and we'll have somebody come and take it away.
Like the dog catcher? But they'll give it a lobotomy or do experiments on it or something.
It's your turn to do the dishes, fellas.
I set and cleared.
I set and cleared.
I did breakfast.
I did breakfast.
What's the matter, Mom?
It's Mexico.
Damn it, why don't you grow up? Think how other people feel for a change.
I don't know if this has ever been explained or Spielberg's talked about it, but where is the father? I know they mentioned Mexico, yeah, but I don't even know if that was meant to be true.
True? Yeah, you don't. I mean, there's no indication.
And
of
I
it.
Couldn't figure out the relationship of the father to that family in terms of who he's talking to, because in that dinner scene, Elliot says he's in Mexico, and it seems like no one else knew that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I have to say that was one thing that was somewhat confusing.
Yeah, I don't. I've always sort of taken it for face value that that Elliot just, you know, happens to know that.
Yeah,
that was.
But she,
you know,
gets
the last
really
thing
upset.
But yeah,
when he mentions that.
Now that you talk about it like that, it does make me wonder if maybe, you know, he is just sort of pushing her buttons, you know, without even really trying, you know, just being like in a sullen mood and just being like, oh, he's in Mexico, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, like, she just making up stories and
she leaves the table.
Yeah.
And I just didn't understand her, why she was so upset apart from just, you know, her family.
Well, I think this is right after he's left them. I mean, I think it is. It's a very fresh wound. And
Spielberg really likes dinner scenes.
He does them very well. He, like, the rapport of people at that dinner table there. And in Jaws, when Hooper comes to visit, and then also Close Encounters, there's a great dinner scene.
Do the line.
Yeah.
Do it.
Tell me you are close to death.
Is that during dinner?
I don't think so.
No. I always think it is for some reason. I think Diana is the one who would always quote Drew Barrymore.
Alligators in the sewers.
Yeah, mimicking what the brother says. Alligators in the sewers.
A deformed kid.
But he does do dinner scenes really well. He does eating well. I mean, he films eating.
Yeah. Well, I think he recognizes the importance of it. Yeah. I think he understands that's, especially in the case of a family, like that's the only time that the they're all together, you know, is when they're at the dinner table. And he accomplishes a lot in that scene, too.
Yeah.
You know, he sets up the tension between them really, really well. And damn, if that is not a tension-filled household, you know?
Yeah. The one thing I also noticed, and so this is one of the things that I was saying earlier, that when he broke this later in the movie, I was somewhat bothered by it. But when the movie's, for the first, maybe first half of the movie, maybe longer, you never see an adult's face except for his mother.
Mm-hmm.
Every adult that appears on screen, you only see their legs or you see the back of their heads or whatever. And I thought that was really incredible.
Yeah.
You know, like the only person that matters in Elliot's world who is an adult is his mom.
Right.
And no one else, you know, everyone else is basically strangers or, you know, they're faceless.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really great device.
Yeah.
So then when what's his face? What's the actor's name?
Peter Coyote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When he is, when they do reveal, when they finally show his face, I was kind of upset because I felt like it broke that in a way that was not good, I guess. But then the progression of that character, I felt like that was warranted, you know?
Yeah. I've struggled with his character a bit.
He's really tough.
He's essentially said, okay, even though he doesn't consider himself part of this agency or whatever, you know, I think he still thinks of himself as an outlier. He's nonetheless, he's working along with them, you know, and he doesn't take an active role in helping them at the end. And in a way I think that's good because I don't know that I'd believe him if he did.
Yeah.
I think it's much better that they pull it off without him being aware of it.
I was going to say, I think that he was really well represented as an adult who identified with Elliot and who wanted to be on Elliot's side and wanted Elliot approval from Elliot, you know, to say like, you know, you get it, right? Like I care for you. I care for E.T., you know,
I'm basically just an older version of you. Yeah.
And I think in a lot of ways he is, but he's an adult.
He grew up. Yeah.
And he cannot go back, you know, and like you said, if he had in some way helped them or tried to redeem himself, it would have felt false. And, I think there have been other movies, Spielberg or not, where you've had that kind of character that, you know, recaptures their childhood and sort of like at the end of the movie is redeemed, you know,
right.
And quote unquote. And I don't think, you know, in the narrative of one movie or another, maybe that works, but in the reality, it doesn't, you know, like they're an adult and that's it, you know, you cannot recapture it. And so I think too, like you can, as much as you can be, endearing to a child, or you can be considered cool or like, you know, a really great adult to a child, you can never get on that wavelength with them.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
you can get close, but you can never get there because you're not there with them.
Yeah. You've moved on. Yeah. You've broke that seal and you can't get back.
And I think that is how that character works for me, you know? And I it was interesting because at the age I'm at now and also knowing how I felt as a kid, I could see both sides of that character. I could see the side that Elliot sees of like, you don't get it. You're just, you know, you're as bad as everyone else. You are as clueless as every other adult in this room.
Right.
But I can also see his point of view of like wanting that connection with Elliot or wanting, you know, being like, I am like you, you know, I was you. And it's just really interesting to see both sides of that coin.
Yeah. I feel like he's genuine when he says, you know, he's so glad that E.T. found Elliot first, you know, like he genuinely does value what Elliot has done, you know? And I think he earnestly wants to convey that to Elliot, you know,
but I
think it's a credit to Spielberg in keeping that distance, you know, and
that
ensuring that there is always some division there that Elliot is never able to actually let him in completely.
Well, and there's just the filmmaking when he makes that statement, there's the plastic screen between them and Elliot's hooked up to all these machines and he's dying.
Yeah.
And you know, the guy, not only is the plastic between them, he's in the suit.
Yeah.
You know, and he's speaking to him through his helmet or whatever that mask is, as well as the plastic sheet. And, you know, it's just absurd that he's trying to connect.
Yeah, yeah.
with Elliot at that point.
He's like, no, no, I'm just like you.
Yeah.
Even though I'm in this apparatus. And, yeah.
It's really great.
Yeah.
That last part of the movie where the house has been transformed, you know, from like as dysfunctional and as full of tension as that house was, it was a home, you know, and it was safe.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the way that, you know,
striking change. Yeah.
So transformed by the infiltration of these people. Although I have to say the one moment in that movie that I was like, you got to cut this part out.
And I was the invasion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was the spacemen. If they had just not been in
astronaut
in
extra vehicular suits.
Yeah. That was so weird. And if they had not walked like zombies.
Yeah.
That took me completely out of the movie for that instant. I get what he was going for.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think had it been handled with just a little more subtlety, I think it would not have lost anything.
It was very overwrought.
Yeah. But I also think like that in a way that works because, or at least it did for me at a certain time, you know, now I look at it and I think, okay, this is a bit much.
Mm-hmm.
But as a child, it was completely terrifying and it put me on the right path to distrusting all of them.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you never quite recover from that initial invasion.
Yeah.
And in order for you to buy that the mother is as violated as the kids are by that, you know, I feel like it does have to be, you know, if it were just guys with, like, government badges on, I don't think it would be quite as genuinely threatening to her.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So the fact that they're faceless and they do seem like something out of a nightmare, you know?
The problem I have with it is that the mother is there. And so I would have been okay with the spacesuits and the sort of slow monster walk if it had just been the kids. Because I could have accepted, like, this is how they're experiencing this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether, you know, the reality of the situation is probably different than what they're seeing.
Sure.
But because she was there, it felt very absurd.
Even though she just saw an alien in her bathtub?
Yes, even though. And all they needed to do, in my opinion, was put him in hazmat suits instead of spacesuits.
Yeah.
And just have them, you know, they don't have to walk. Like, literally, the one guy held his arms out.
Yeah. Well, one, like, jumps out at her, like, grabs her and goes, ha!
Yeah, it's really, what were they, what are those guys thinking, you know? Like, what, before that scene where they, like, I'm going to sneak, okay, guys, let's freak this family out. Get the spacesuits out.
I think you have to go along with the idea that her perception has been compromised, too. In that scene. I'm not saying that I disagree with your take on it, but I think that that's, if there is an explanation for it, if there is a validation for it, it's that, you know, she is not seeing things the way they are either.
You never see the spacemen after that.
Again, yeah. No, they're gone.
They're gone. Suddenly. Yeah. The one reaches through their window.
Yeah.
What was the plan?
She's going to pull her out through their glass. Yeah.
Where's your mask?
It's back here.
Well, get it on.
I'm trying.
Hey, who are you?
I'm driving.
Open the door, son.
There's a guy out here. What do I do?
Well, what are you waiting for? Let's go! Well, let's get out of here, Michael!
I've never driven forward before! Get the bikes! Meet us
this at the playground at the top of the hill.
Let's do it!
I didn't know it when I was riding my bike as a kid, but I was reenacting that chase every day.
Day in and day out.
You know.
I think everybody is, yeah. It was when you're in your own little world on your bike.
That scene captured in a way that I don't think I've ever seen captured before, even with Goonies. And there was some good bike stuff,
yeah.
But the power you feel, or the, not freedom, but like you feel like you can get away from anything.
Yeah.
On your bike as a kid, you know, it is in a very basic sense, it's faster than you can go in any other situation where you're in control, you know? And so you feel liberated and you feel like nothing can catch you.
Yeah.
And that scene embodies that.
Yeah. You know, so that, perfectly captured it. Yeah. And I love that they build up to it. Too, you know, like it's not just, you know, there's a progressive use of the bike up to that, you know. If anything, I almost think this is the first time I felt this way, but after watching it this time, I almost feel like I would be okay if that scene of him flying over the moon, you know, that sort of signature scene, were not even in there.
Yeah.
Because I think that the end is so much more powerful than that, actually. You know, when they take off, it, you know, in a way it would be actually more surprising and impressive not having had that precedent established.
Yeah.
You know, because I think you believe, you're at that point, you're willing to believe that E.T. could do it, even if you haven't seen him do it, you know, before that. But yeah, that, I think Spielberg, the last 15 minutes or so of Spielberg, most of Spielberg's movies are probably, I don't think anybody closes out a movie the way Spielberg does. And I don't know that he's necessarily the best at an ending, but I think like the closure of the movie,
the triumph,
his climaxes are incredible.
And they're very cathartic.
Yeah.
Like you really, you get like, he pays off.
Yes.
So well.
Yeah.
I think he can stumble a bit with the denouement, if you will.
Sure, yeah.
Whatever follows that.
Yeah.
But man, does he know how to write that final scene.
Nails it. And then this is probably the best example of that, you know.
Yes.
I think like I don't know if I read this or if he said this in an interview or something, but like the ending of that movie was paced a little differently in its original cut.
Mm-hmm.
And then he saw, or he listened to John Williams' score for it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he couldn't, it didn't sync up correctly. And he ended up going back and recutting the ending of the movie to fit the score. And I think that was possibly the coolest thing ever. because that last piece of music is so amazing, and it works so well I think it, you know, it's even better than the main theme of, the movie. Again, better than that, the scene in the forest.
I saw the St. Louis Symphony did a John Williams movie music night, and the conductor mentioned that, but it is pretty mind-blowing that how good that scene is.
Yeah.
Considering he recut it
from the get go. Like it's so, especially obviously the buildup has a lot to do with it. You know, you're so tightly wound at that point and you're so ready for a release.
Yeah.
That, you know, I think it, if you're looking at it from a strictly analytical perspective, you might say, well, this is absurd. You know, of course they're going to have extra layers of security or, you know, whatever. Like there's no way that van's getting through, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
But you don't even question it when it gets out of there. You know, you are just like completely aligned with those kids.
It's a fantasy film and not primarily because of the alien in it.
Right.
I think it's fantasy because it is, the world is seen through a child's perspective, and in a child's world, they will get away.
Yeah.
You know, they are smarter than the adults, and it doesn't matter how many cops are chasing them. Like, they know their neighborhood.
Yeah.
They know how to get around things. They're on their bikes. They're more agile.
It's their terrain. Yeah,
exactly. So there's, it doesn't matter how many people are after them, they're going to get away.
Yeah.
Like, that's the fantasy of that movie to me.
Yeah.
And throughout the movie, you know, they're always one step ahead.
Yeah.
Of any adult.
Master
in
of their environment.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I love how simple the premise of that final scene is it's, they're being chased on bikes through their neighborhood. Like, that's, you know, if you just said that, like, that's how we're going to end the movie, you might be like, well, that's boring, you know, but it's so like, thrilling.
Yeah. God, it's so good.
It really is. Like, I love some of the shots that he has in there where the camera is like right on the ground and the bikes all kind of race past it. And the sound of the rubber on the pavement and like the way that the bikes bend, you know, as they move, and how much it's clear how much like, physicality is required to make that bike go, you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah. They're like pumping along and you can like see their arms, like, you know, moving the front, tire, it's handlebars really great. And stuff.
But I totally agree with you. I think that last moment, it would have been much more powerful without the earlier scene with Elliot and E.T. And it's fun. I can't imagine it without that earlier scene either. Do you know what I mean? Like that earlier scene is so critical in a different way.
Yeah.
You know, and just a moment of elation and, you know, a sort of magic that had not occurred yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that that's the zenith of their relationship, I guess, you know, it's where the literal manifestation of how close they are as friends, you know, or whatever that, and in such a visually striking way, you know, obviously, I mean, it became, you know, it's probably one of the most recognizable images of all time, you know, in terms of movies. Like, if you took a single frame from a film, I think that shot of his silhouette against the moon is probably more recognizable than 98% of other movie scenes. But yeah, I the euphoria that I get from that scene does not come close to what I get from the scene of them taking off over the cop cars at the end.
I was slightly disappointed. Like, I wanted that to mean so much more, that moment.
Oh, with the moon?
No, before. When they go over the cops.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it was because I knew what was about to happen. Yeah. You know, I was just waiting. In fact, through the whole scene, I was waiting for them all to lift off, you know. Uh-huh. I was waiting for that moment to happen. And it was still incredibly rewarding.
Yeah.
But it was somewhat taken and there was something taken away from it because of, I knew it was coming.
Yeah.
You know, and, it was really tough to like decide between those two scenes, I think.
Yeah.
Because one's really important for a character and one's really important for the scene. I think you need, I think you do need that first one.
Yeah. Or I think most people would agree.
I don't know.
I do too, I guess.
I guess you would need something comparable emotionally for Elliot and E.T.
Yeah.
You know,
especially given where you're about to go.
Yeah.
You know, because right after that is where it starts to decline and where you start getting into like the real, I guess the dramatic down point.
Yeah.
You know, which I'm not going to say that if you don't,
go on, just say it.
Well, okay. So,
don't cry.
A good friend of mine, a very good friend of mine, longtime friend of mine, who is also a Spielberg aficionado. We're, you know, very much in sync when it comes to like our appreciation of the early works of Spielberg in particular. He texted me a couple of months ago and he said, this is the entire, content of the text. It was two sentences. Watched E.T. again last night. Lost my shit. and that's, I think you have to be lying to yourself if you don't acknowledge that you can at least see why it impact so many people that way.
Yeah.
You know, and that it is genuine, you know,
yeah.
That it doesn't, it never at any point does it feel like schmaltzy to me or, you know,
me either.
Yeah. Certain things, I think I'm very susceptible to certain things more so than maybe other people are.
Mm-hmm.
So this movie in particular, not only given that susceptibility, but the fact that I have basically grown up with it. So it is like, in sort of the same way that people respond to looking at images of their childhood, you know, mm-hmm. if they look at Polaroids or something and have a reaction to it, I sort of have the same thing with this movie. Like mm-hmm. I see this movie and I flash back to moments in my life.
Yeah.
So I maybe, it affects me a little more deeply than I think it does for some people, especially as, you know, a 32-year-old or whatever, you know? But like I said earlier, it's what I think is amazing about it. And this kind of goes along with one of my arguments for why it is such a good movie. Like I have a completely different, there are different scenes that affect me more now than there were that affected me, you know, when I was in high mm-hmm. school. And the one that kills me now, is when Elliot comes home the morning after Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's missing and the cops are talking to his mother and she's, you know, describing what he was wearing. And she's about to break down. And just at that moment, he appears and her expression of that mixture of anguish and relief. And it is sort of like, you know, her hitting bottom almost and realizing just how, you know, distant she is from her kids at this point and how sort of broken their family is. As a kid, that moment didn't mean anything to me. You know, mm-hmm. I was concerned about the alien, you know, but now that scene just like, I cave every time I see it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it affirms my belief that Spielberg, whether, he and, Melissa Matheson, who wrote it,
mm-hmm.
whether they knew they were doing this or not, I think this is part of the reason why it works so well is that there is an in for everybody in this movie.
Yeah.
You can either relate to Gertie or you can relate to Elliot or you can relate to, Michael
mm-hmm.
or you can relate to the mom.
Yeah.
There's somebody, somehow you can see yourself in this movie at some point somewhere.
I really hated that E.T. left Elliot, you know,
mm-hmm.
oh, man, that really killed me.
Yeah.
And not in a way that I'm angry at E.T.
Yeah.
You know, like you get it, you get why you get that these two have to separate, you know?
Yeah.
But man, just killed me.
Yeah.
That they can't, after creating that bond, they cannot be together.
Yeah.
You know, and also just like, What kills me throughout that movie is the lack of Elliot's father and,
mm-hmm.
you know, how alone he is.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact that he has to, at the end of this movie, still go back to that in a way and sort of like, he's better armed now. He's stronger and he is definitely a different kid.
Yeah.
Now that he's experienced this, but he still has to go back to a home without a father and no adult really has proved themselves to him.
Yeah.
You know, he's still, I think he has a similar outlook probably after E.T. leaves, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that really bums me out in that, you know, he still has to face this alone, but I think it also is part of, again, the realism of the movie, you know, and I think it's important that he still has to face these things, you know?
Yeah.
Like E.T. doesn't really solve anything for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think E.T. opens his eyes to a lot of things.
Yeah.
And gives him an emotional outlet that he didn't have and maybe that he can have now. Right.
Yeah.
But his family is still broken, I think, at the end of that movie, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're all closer, but I still think that there's going to be
there's going to be still tension there. Yeah,
But maybe they're a little bit more better equipped to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think if anything, the person that is most helped by E.T. is the mom,
mm-hmm.
you know, because she is awakened to how much she has lost control.
Yeah.
You know, and that maybe now she can refocus and...
Or that I think at least that she can confront the situation.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, she's, I think for a bit, at least through the majority of the opening of the movie, she's avoiding
it. Yeah.
Yeah. She's just trying to, you know, drown herself in her daily, you know,
you know,
life.
I think that aspect of it, her ignoring what's really going on is never more, obvious than when she comes home and Elliot is obviously not sick and wasn't sick.
Yeah.
You know, and she doesn't, she doesn't punish him. She doesn't, you know, she's just like, oh, you're feeling better. It's like, you knew he wasn't sick.
Right. You never believed he was sick, you know, in the beginning. Yeah.
I didn't even think about that until you, you know, mentioned that. And I think maybe at the end of the movie, the family is stronger as a family.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They've been through this thing together and.
Yeah. At the very least, I think they'll be the level with each other.
Yeah.
And I think there is strength in that.
Yeah.
You know, they'll get somewhere through that.
What happens to the keys at the end of that, man?
Yeah. You got to wonder, like, does he get reprimanded or anything?
Where does he go?
Yeah. Who knows? Who is he? I mean, what does he do? That's
the mystery. Those keys are something else. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The focus on them is, you know, I mean, he's like the keys. He's got the control. He's got... You know, he can
he's
unlock
like
the doors,
or something.
He can get in. He can get to you. You know that bundle of keys represents a lot of different things.
Yeah,
especially to a kid. I think.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, he's equal parts like principal and
janitor.
Yeah, and cop.
But I do at the end of the movie when they're all sort of looking up at the sky. I'm like, where is Keys going from here? Like, you know, and there's I don't think you can avoid thinking about like him and the mother.
Yeah.
You know, as much as I don't like the idea, you can't help but go there. I think when you're watching it.
Yeah. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that, you know, but they also, I think it's left ambiguous enough that you assume that there's at least going to be a college try there, you know, like the two have some point of relation now.
Yeah.
They have a communal experience that they can relate to.
He has shown an interest in Elliot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm really glad that they never overtly did anything with that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm glad the movie ends where it ends and that, you know, they never make any kind of like, oh, this might be Elliot's new dad.
Yeah.
You know?
He doesn't like reach out and take her hand
exactly,
or anything like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well played, Steven.
He did. That's a really good movie. And I don't know what, you know, again, as a teenager, I'm not sure. Maybe I just was not in the right mindset for it or, you know, maybe I just was looking for something different out of movies at that point, but, it hit me in a lot of ways that I didn't expect, both artistically and thematically.
Yeah.
You know, that I really was impressed with this movie.
This is my silent triumph over here.
And it, you know, I think maybe one of the worst things is, and that's probably what you've been feeling for some time, is like, why can't he capture that again?
Yeah.
I feel like every movie since E.T. has been in a way an attempt to recapture what he got with E.T., especially when the kids are involved, you know?
Not,
I don't mean like an overt and, you know, attempt,
but something subconscious,
yeah,
you know, that he's striving for. Yeah, well, I mean, he's definitely never made a movie that I think, certainly nothing that ever had as wide and as strong an impact.
Yeah.
And that's saying something, because I mean, obviously Jurassic Park was huge,
and Jurassic Park's huge for a lot of different reasons.
It
is a very different film. It is nowhere near as personal.
Yeah.
But it is...
That's the distinction, too, I think.
I think that's the biggest difference, you know?
Yeah.
It has all the magic. It has the great filmmaking that Spielberg is, you know, known for. Mm-hmm. I think the main difference is the level that it is not a personal film.
Yeah. And I don't think he's, in a way, I feel like he didn't have anything. One, he didn't have anything to prove, and he didn't have anything to learn necessarily mm-hmm. when he made Jurassic Park. You know, mm-hmm. he was a master at what yeah. he was doing, and it's as far as filmmaking prowess, it may be that may be his best. You know, work.
I think he still had some things to learn because mm-hmm. that was right. That Jurassic Park jumps into the world of CG special effects, and you know, he paved the way for what would come in a lot of ways with that yeah. movie, and so I think that was probably the last time he learned on a movie,
mm-hmm.
and in the process. Well, I won't say that because that's not true. I was going to say in the process of filmmaking, he may not have learned anything. It may have all been in post that he learned.
Yeah.
But that's not true because a lot of the ways that they were shooting that movie were different than the way yeah. that you would shoot a movie because there was nothing there for an actor to look at, yeah. to react to. So I think he probably, you know, he finished school, basically, right. Jurassic Park, you know.
That was his thesis.
And so yeah. from you know, Jurassic Park on, I wonder if he's really, maybe I should say from Schindler's List on,
mm-hmm.
I wonder if he's really had something personal to say with his movies or if he's really felt what, you know, felt the, I don't know how to put it, really been personally
imbued with yeah, his. Yeah,
exactly.
I think there have been moments, but I don't think they've ever been anywhere yeah. close to what he like. There's a scene in Catch Me If You Can that I mm-hmm. think is probably one of the strongest things he's done it since Jurassic Park or Schindler's List, and it's where Frank, the Leonardo DiCaprio character, after being on the run for so long, and you know, he has his sort of high point, and then mm-hmm. he kind of hits the low ebb, and he comes home.
Yeah.
To his mother's house, and he looks in and he sees his mother with some other dude that's yeah. not his dad, you know, and he just stands outside in the snow and he can't go yeah. in, and he could physically go in, but he knows that he doesn't belong there.
Yeah.
And I think that moment was really well done and showed, you know, an emotional investment mm-hmm. in that character. But yeah, nothing sustained, certainly, the way that E.T. is from start to finish an expression of him,
yeah.
you know, his personal experience. And maybe it's just because, you know, I imagine part of what makes E.T. so good is because it's about a child of a broken home
yeah.
from a, you know, a person, you know, from a broken home.
Yeah.
Like he obviously drew on personal experience and personal emotion there. And it's hard for me to believe that there is anything really that can compare as you know, in terms of impacting you as a person mm-hmm. as that experience, you know, would.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I like to think that, you know, maybe he will someday, you know, hit that mark again, but
yeah.
in order to do so, he would have to speak from a place that was as deeply as affecting as
yeah.
that growing up in that environment. So
I don't think he has to. I mean, he's
no
he has done a lot of amazing movies and
yeah.
said incredible things, and I think it's, you know, he's done it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was trying to
hang it
think,
up tomorrow
yeah
and, I wouldn't think poorly of him. Yeah.
I was trying to think, you know, the E.T. and movies like E.T. from that era, and maybe as I wouldn't even say as recent as the 90s. I was trying to think of a movie that captures the sort of closeness that is in E.T. and a lot mm-hmm. of movies like that, where you really feel like you're there
mm-hmm.
and that there's, you know, the camera is really embedded
mm-hmm.
into the movie. And I can't think of one that comes close to it, a modern film,
right?
And thinking back to like what's the J.J. Abrams one, That was a Spielbergian.
Oh yeah, Super 8.
Super 8.
Yeah.
Was a really great homage.
Mm-hmm.
But it can't really get past the fact that it's an homage.
Yeah.
I think that I think of Attack the Block
mm-hmm.
in a way that is very much like E.T., you know, for some funny reasons in that there's an alien and there's kids dealing with it and they're very different ways, you know, obviously they deal with it. But what I think Attack the Block shares with E.T. and why I think I felt this way even before watching E.T. again, mm-hmm. Attack the Block represents what a lot of E.T., Goonies, movies like that did.
Yeah.
Was that it puts the power in the kids' hands and the adults are incompetent.
Yeah.
You know, the kids in Attack the Block are the only ones who have it together.
Yeah.
You know, and
it's their vulnerabilities and the shortcomings of their environment or their circumstances that enable them to take on that
later,
in the way that nobody else can. Yeah.
Yes. Which makes me like that movie that much more.
Yeah. So we got to do an episode on that one, I guess, now.
Oh, man, we do. So I'm really glad we did this because I now have a new favorite film.
Nice. And a new favorite picture of me.
And a great picture of you. I put in my wallet. Showed all my friends.
Wait a minute.
So put this one in the archive.